Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Our program brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, Painting and Custom Wood Finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. By Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Vermont at HomeBuildersVT.com. By Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all online at PolyConstruction.com. Your participation today is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jim Bradley, and I'm here today with my colleague Chris West.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, we're back again, and this is week six of our radio
Woo-hoo!
Show. Yeah, it's a really interesting opportunity, and I have to give a big thanks out there to all the listeners who've been calling in and the feedback that we've been getting. It's been really rewarding, and this is what Chris and myself have been passionate about for decades now, and having this opportunity has been wonderful. And thank you for calling in. And once again, when you do call in, please call 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255. This week, we're going to be talking about another topic related to building operation or building performance, and that's going to be indoor air quality.
The air we breathe.
All the time. It's the time of year when we're starting to shut the windows up, close the doors, turn on the heating systems, fire up the wood stove, and starting to make the environment in our home more enclosed. And so we have to take certain considerations into mind when we're doing these things and how the house is going to perform, not just from an energy efficiency standpoint, but from a health and safety standpoint. And indoor air quality is that big variable that we have to address today.
It's the one that most people don't think about. You see condensation on the wall, you see mold growing somewhere, you have a headache every now and then, you don't put two and two together, linking what could be the cause of that and your symptoms. But as soon as we're in our heating season, we're inside, our combustion materials are burning to give us heat, we're burning wood, we're burning oil, we're burning natural gas, whatever we're doing, or a mixture of those things, and we're cooking, and we're just not opening our windows. So if we're not putting those lungs into our house, right, those machines that breathe for us, then we could be having a lot less fresh air in order to stay nice and healthy.
You know, I have an HRV, two of them actually in my house that I did as a renovation.
Heat recovery ventilation.
Yes, and I have that to bring in fresh air and to keep the indoor air quality where it should be. And with that, I can tell when those units are not on, because when we first close up the windows, we don't have them on because you're bringing in outside air through the windows. But when those are off, you can just tell. You step in there and it's like, wow, it just feels stale in here. And there's something different about it. But you turn them on and it just really helps the overall well-being of somebody.
And we have been in numerous houses where one of the questions we throw out there is, so, do you sometimes get tired when you get home from work and you're sitting around? Or do you get headaches? Or are you sometimes dizzy and you're not understanding why?
That brings me back to the gentleman in St. Albans that we did an energy audit for years ago. And we found that every time his wife came home, she would get huge headaches. And he assured us that it wasn't because of him.
Him, right.
Yeah. but also, he every Sunday when he would do the laundry, he would start to get a little fatigue and have to take a nap. And I said, said, okay, so we looked downstairs and we found out that their heating system downstairs was blocked. They could not exhaust appropriately. So all that exhaust, a good portion of it, was we even found a bird's nest in the chimney that was causing the blockage. And so that was getting into the airstream and it was affecting the occupants. You know, it could have been catastrophic.
I remember that other woman up in Swanton when we went to her house and we were sitting there and she said, you know, I think I'm just old, but I've been getting really tired when I'm getting up and I'm making my breakfast. In the basement, we found that there was a backdrafting problem with the furnace, and that was filling up the basement with carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, and that was leaking into the house upstairs. The carbon monoxide was well above legal limits when we got there. So we were like, okay, that's when you red label that thing and have a professional come in and make sure everything's okay.
And so some of these effects of indoor air quality are the things that could be dangerous. Don't have to be catastrophic. It doesn't have to result in death to actually cause a problem for the occupants inside the building. So what we want to do is look at what are some of those contaminants, what are some of the pollutants that could be inside your indoor air stream, and how can you improve those, and what is the right steps to take in doing so?
Yeah, we're going to start off just by looking at why indoor air quality is important. Now, it sounds like that should be self-evident. We all need good fresh air to breathe. But if we're living in our house and we think everything's going okay, but there might be an underlying issue, then we want to take a closer look at that just to make sure. So let's start out with what the law says. The Residential Building Energy Standard requires, as of September of this year,
yes,
the new code requires at least mechanical exhaust, which is where you have bath fans and your range hood fans,
yes,
and that those have to be able to exhaust the house to a minimum of 50 CFM continuous or 100 CFM
yes,
spot. So if you don't have your bath fans running all the time, exhausting 50, or have it on when you need it every now and then, either whether that's on a sensor or where you're doing it on a timer, then you're probably not getting the minimum required air as per code.
And think about this, that Vermonters are living in enclosed home environments for at least 6 to 9 months out of the year,
depending on the length of the winter.
Exactly. And your overall comfort level. But switch that to another part of the United States. You know, when you go into the down south in Florida, you're living inside of an air-conditioned environment for up to 9 months or more. And so these considerations have to be looked at in all climates. And this is what we're going to be doing today. One thing that we want to look at is, you know, what is in the airstream? What are some of those contaminants that could be causing us some issues? And what are those effects that it has on the body? So, Chris, what would you say that would be some of the benefits of correcting some of these issues?
Well, there's no question that if you have slightly bad indoor air quality or really bad indoor air quality, you're going to be having some health effects from that. And so when we're looking at what would happen if we approve them, overall, the statistics show that increased quality of indoor air quality decreases the use of healthcare services and medications, lower healthcare bills, certainly improved quality of life. If you come home and when you get home, you're unaware that the indoor air quality is causing you to get tired or headaches, that's going to lower your quality of life. Improved durability of the house and comfort. And also, by the way, if you put in the right systems, lower energy consumption and energy savings.
And because, you know, when you're breathing things, you know, the body is resilient, wonderfully resilient. It can take a lot of abuse in the sense of the things we breathe in. Did you know that we take in about 2 tablespoons on average of particulates? We ingest those through the lungs and everything else every day.
Yummy.
Yes. You don't know. You want to know where those are coming from, but maybe you don't want to know where they're coming from. Oh, by the way, an interesting fact. Does everybody know that 70% of all dust inside of our homes is actually human skin cells. So I guess we're all a little bit cannibalistic there.
Well, the skin mites are in there eating up some of it. So.
Yes. So, but, you know, all these different stressors on the body, you may be able to be exposed to this for years, and it doesn't really set up a blatant health problem that you can see. But when you start to look at some of the results of cancers, heart issues, lung issues, this all plays into it. I remember that one in Jeffersonville where we went inside the house, Chris, and it was an old 1800s home. It had a really nasty basement, and they had a hot air furnace, and the gentleman had a lung transplant.
Oh, my gosh.
And what did they do, Chris?
Well, so in order to make sure that he would have good indoor air quality, they put in an HRV in the basement with this incredible incredibly complex ultraviolet scrubber for it. But none of it was hooked up right, and they weren't changing or cleaning the filters. So they were not told, clean the filters. This man who had a lung transplant and his wife were living in this house, and we opened up the box, and we're like, so this has been in here for a year and a half. When's the last time you cleaned and or changed the filters? And the woman looked at us like we were nuts.
Yeah, and actually, one of the other things that Chris noted during that assessment is that the air that was coming in was not coming in from outside.
No, it was from the basement.
In the nasty, dank, mold-ridden basement. And so how could this gentleman really do well or recover when he had these kind of issues? And it makes me a little bit concerned. He'd been living in there for over a generation. Is that possibly the culprit of what caused his original issues with his lungs?
And it causes us to question the people who installed that system and maintain the system, that they installed it improperly and that they didn't tell the homeowner that, A, either they needed to have a maintenance agreement with that company to come and make sure the filters were operating right, or that they told them to change the filters or clean them on a regular basis. That is unconscionable from my point of view.
So, you know, some of the indoor contaminants, pollutants, whether it be mites, whether it be allergens, whether it be other issues that are in the airstream, can be addressed somewhat by, you know, let's say you have a hot air system and you have a filter in there. If it's the right type of filter, a certain MERV rating on that, it can be a real benefit. However, most people, once again, like Chris said, we go down into the basement, we see that that filter has not been changed in at least a season or more. So what I usually tell people is you should be changing these on a minimum once a month during the heating season. And write the month of the season, you know, so start in October, November, December. And if you come downstairs and it's January and you're still looking at October, time to change the filter.
And most forced hot air systems are recirculation systems. They're not bringing in fresh air from outside.
Exactly.
They're just recirculating the air inside. So
it is picking up some of the contaminants, but you're right. It's not bringing that fresh air out. In fact, during this whole COVID issue that was going on, a lot of people thought that once it got warmer, that the threat of COVID would drop. And as I was just thinking about this, I told my wife, you know what's going to happen? We're going to see a massive outbreak in the South. Because that's when they're inside.
Going in, right?
Yes, and they have air conditioning systems that's moving air around and the germs and everything else, but it's not actually cleaning the air or bringing in fresh air from the outside. And so this becomes a really important issue.
So when we're talking about particulates or any kind of indoor air quality, what are we actually talking
about?
What
am I sucking in, Chris?
What am I sucking in? So we all know that we're sucking in oxygen, and you wouldn't think oxygen is a poison, and we're not talking about oxygen being poison here, but if you're bringing 100% oxygen, that's actually poisonous. So we want to watch out for that, but that's not what we're talking about here. The main contaminants are going to be your carbon dioxide, which is from us breathing out, or from your combustion materials. You have carbon monoxide, which is much more insidious. It's colorless, it's odorless, and the difference between carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide is that carbon dioxide, we breathe it in, we breathe it out. Our lungs exchange the oxygen and carbon dioxide in our lungs. Carbon monoxide is different. Carbon monoxide actually will be fit into the hole in hemoglobin, in your red blood cells, and not leave. So every time you're breathing carbon monoxide, if you get carbon monoxide poisoning and you run outside to get a breath of fresh air,
it doesn't do anything.
You need a blood transfer in order to get your blood replaced, because that blood can no longer transport oxygen. We also have volatile organic compounds.
VOCs.
And VOCs come from a number of places. Whenever you're breathing the exhaust from a car, that's VOCs. Whenever you have paint that is off-gassing into your house, or if you have particle board cabinets, those all have VOCs. That fresh carpet smell.
Oh, that was the new car smell.
The
same
new
thing.
Car smell.
That's all VOCs. But then you also have cleaning products that we use in our homes. And different type of tobacco smokes, whether it's legal or not. Those are stressors, once again, in the airstream that will affect us over time.
And just to finish up this list, we look at radon, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you have not had your house checked for radon or have bought a house, actually, if you bought a house, there's a requirement that it's been tested. Hopefully that's been happening. But if you have a radon of four parts per million or higher.
Microcuries.
That is where you have to have radon mitigation. And we can't tell. There are maps where radon is higher, but I could live next door to Jim, and Jim could have no radon, and I could have massive radon. It's so hard to pinpoint.
And what's important there is when we construct a new home, we're putting in a radon piping for mitigation, that it's going to be a properly attached to underneath the slab, and that once the house is built, then you have the test done. And if you find radon in there, then you go ahead and get the fan to take it out.
On the phone, we have Robin King from Efficiency Vermont. Robin runs the Healthy Homes Initiative. Welcome, Robin, to House Calls Vermont.
Hello. Thank you, Chris and Jim, for having me today. I'm very excited to talk about what we have going on at Efficiency Vermont. And I thank you also for bringing up this topic of healthy homes and indoor air quality to the listeners. I think it's perfect timing to talk about this in the wake of everything that's going on.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the things that, you know, people look at their homes and a lot of times they say, I just want to improve my efficiency. Well, there's so much more to that. And I've said for years, if the insurance companies actually get onto this and realize how much the indoor air quality is affecting our health, they will be a big protagonist to get this done more so. And I know you've had some actual pilot programs going on with some of that. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. We have partnered with some local area hospitals, the Vermont Department of Health, and the weatherization agencies to run some pilots over the past couple of years. These are certainly focused on the nexus between building energy efficiency and better health, and have involved a number of measures installed in homes to help folks who are low income, who are especially vulnerable, to hopefully see some better health outcomes. And for any of the listeners who are interested in learning more about these pilots, there's actually a couple of white papers online that anyone can access where you can kind of download the reports and see what we found. But certainly a really exciting initiative undertaken by us in conjunction with a lot of our program partners. And we've learned a lot throughout the pilot periods. But, it's an exciting effort that we're able to help support. And my colleagues, Laura Capps and Phoebe Howe, were instrumental in moving those forward.
Great. We, as a part of one of the ideas we had for moving forward, we were looking at working with Efficiency Vermont on possibly getting some of those indoor air quality monitors and getting to some of our listeners and checking those out. We heard that those monitors are now still in use. So hopefully in the spring, before we start opening our doors and windows, when those become free, we might be able to go ahead and work with you on finding out what the indoor air quality is for some of our listeners. That is using, if I understand right, the IQ Air monitor. Is that the monitor you guys are using for that?
Yeah, it's IQ Air Visual Pro. They are a little costly, I will admit.
About $270.
Something that a homeowner is, yeah, you got it. There are kind of different scales of indoor air quality monitors that are available on the market. And I would advise any homeowner who's interested in having one in their homes, to your point, Chris, either seeing if we might have one available to use, or there are a list of indoor air quality monitors that range in price and also what they're monitoring. And certainly if I'm a homeowner, which I am, and I want one that's kind of live time in my house all the time, I would look at kind of what's available on the market and decide what that indoor air quality monitor is measuring and what I'm specifically interested in or what might be most impactful to me in order to make that decision. So if there is a concern about humidity or the particulate matter, there are indoor air quality monitors that will look at that more specifically. So it might just make sense to kind of dip toes in and not get something that's extraordinarily expensive, but we'll still measure the things that are most important to the homeowner.
Great. And also, are there any specific programs right now or any measures or assessments or site reviews that Efficiency Vermont is sponsoring or assisting homeowners with at this point in time?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, kind of our most premier live time campaign that we have going on currently is the Button Up Vermont Initiative. Mm-hmm. And so this is a kind of statewide initiative being participated in by multiple communities across the state. And this is something where we are able to offer virtual home energy visits to homeowners. So that would include one of our energy consultants connecting over the screen or over the phone with an interested homeowner and doing a 60 to 90 minute kind of visit or walk through to see what they can find. And, you know, most of the conversation is led by the homeowner for interesting kind of things or pain points that the homeowner is experiencing. And the energy consultant can make tailored recommendations to the homeowner on what might be most impactful for them to look at in the short term and also in the long term, because we know that some homeowners are really interested in a very comprehensive project and some others are more interested in knowing what they might be able to do themselves. So some of our energy consultants have a Building Performance Institute Healthy Home Evaluator certification. So they are able to talk about topics like indoor air quality and also how weatherization projects, whether it be more comprehensive or DIY projects, may be able to impact the indoor air quality. We also have a really great guide online. It's under, I have the website in front of me. I think there may be a link posted after today's show that kind of shows some of the simple solutions and more complex kind of advanced options for people to improve their indoor air quality. So I definitely recommend that people check out all of the resources that we have on the web so that you can kind of better understand what you might want to do and how that might impact your indoor air quality and the overall building health.
Excellent, Robin. And we, what we hope to do in one of the upcoming shows as well is really get into the Healthy Home Initiative and what that means on a broader scale, not just indoor air quality. And we're hoping that we might be able to have you back during that show.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I did fail to mention there's another very good resource that we have right now, which is in partnership with our contractor network under our home performance contract, which is Healthy Home Assessments. Mm-hmm. And there is a description of what this is online. You can find it on our assessments page. But this is done in concert with our excellent contractors in our network. And this is where a contractor essentially would come in and do a very comprehensive look at your home and come up with some recommendations and a work scope that would tailor kind of the eight principles that would highlight the eight principles of healthy homes so the homeowner can kind of take a deeper dive, see things that might be behavioral, things that might be structural. And, you know, we welcome participation for any homeowner who's interested in hiring that independent contractor to take a deeper dive.
Excellent. Well, Robin, thank you for joining us this week, and we definitely look forward to having you back next time.
Awesome. Thank you so much again, Jim and Chris. This was an excellent opportunity, and I thank you so much for helping increase the literacy on building science throughout Vermont. And I'm just very excited about the show, and so thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Robin. Have a good rest of your weekend.
So if you want to call... And so if you want to call in with any questions that you might have regarding your home or upcoming building project, please give us a call at 802-244-1777. And before the break, we were getting into some of the other particulates that, or some of the contaminants that could be in the airstream. And it reminds me, you know, Robin said something about a weatherization button-up Vermont training that they have. And those are virtually, they're online now. They're virtual meetings at this point. But there was one that I did up in the North Country here years ago, and it was about a two-hour-long presentation. It was a cold winter night, and, yeah, keeping everybody's attention was challenging. But there was a gentleman that sat up there, and he looked like Santa Claus. Oh, my gosh. He didn't have the red suit and, you know, white and the cap and everything.
Wrong time of year.
Yeah. But, well, it was getting to the fall, but he was – He sat there for 2 hours with his hands over his chest and arms over his chest, I should say. And then finally at the very end, he said, "Now I have a question." And he started talking about the fact that he lived in this old farmhouse. He knew it was very leaky, and he burns 14 cords of wood a year, happy to chop it, happy to tote it, happy to burn it, and no one in his house gets sick. And now we're trying to tell him to button it up and make everything, put all these plastics in there and contaminants. And it's like, whoa, wait, we're not trying to do that. We're trying to effectively source products that will make the house tighter, will make it more efficient, but we first and foremost look at the health and safety of the occupants. You know, if you're going to do work to the house, take those things in consideration, and also the durability. Make sure it's going to last, because if something's not durable and it starts to rot, and it starts because of mold or because of whatever, that's going to get into your airstream. And that's why you got to take those things in consideration first before you get into the efficiency side of things. But we were talking about some of these things. One of the favorite ones that Chris has, because he jokes about this often, is about the rodents that are in our house and what they leave behind.
Yeah, well, the next one on the list is particulates. And
yes,
that can be in a number of things. The first particulate we have on the list is vermiculite.
Yes.
We've spoken about vermiculite before. Vermiculite is a type of insulation, the vermiculite itself, there's nothing wrong with it. It's perfectly okay to be around vermiculite, and it was used as attic flat insulation, attic slope insulation, some houses that
wall insulation,
balloon framing where it's in there as well. And until the mid-1970s, you could just go to the local hardware store and pick up a bag of vermiculite. The problem is that we found out that the mines that they were getting these from, one of them, well-known one in Libby, Montana, had veins of asbestos running through it. So almost all of that vermiculite is actually asbestos contaminated. And asbestos, as we know, is a highly dangerous material for breathing. We want to make sure we're not breathing it. So it's one of those things where we go to some houses and the person had a home inspection. The home inspector report says, hey, there's 5 inches of vermiculite in the attic, and doesn't say anything about the fact that that is dangerous. And then you go to the Department of Health website and it says, vermiculite, no, run away, screaming into the woods. So that's an important one. Also, that the rodent droppings in your walls. I was going through some infrared pictures. I'll put them on our YouTube channel next week. But looking at some infrared camera pictures where we can see the houses and the pathways that these rodents have in the walls. And when you're using your walls as the air leakage that brings fresh air into your house, then you're getting that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a little known fact about the rodents themselves, they are massive breeders, you know. And once they get in your home and set up, they're going to like that warm environment. They're going to chew through whatever they can if they smell food or sense heat. And then once they get in, they'll be able to breed to the point where they could produce as much as 140 mice per year, one female mice could, and they would actually have up to 5 to 10 pregnancies. So that's huge. And if that's in your walls and that's in your attic and they're chewing on this, that, or the other, your electrical wiring, it's a real hazard. But doing proper weatherization and air sealing measures will go a long way to prohibit them from getting in and then affecting your indoor air quality.
I'm just going to throw the number out there. Please, if you have a question or have a situation you'd like to discuss with us, it's 802-244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. The other thing that we're interested in and we find all the time is mold. We did an audit for a friend of ours 6 years ago, and he had a leaky chimney. And the chimney was one of those middle-of-the-house chimneys, right? We usually have a chimney either in the middle of the house or on the north or on an outside wall. This was right in the middle of the house, and the flashing had gone, and there was a mold bloom in his daughter's closet, which was appalling to us. And we found that by chasing it back up, that it was coming all the way from water that was coming through the poorly flashed chimney and was just sitting there in the closet. And that when you have a surface of your sheetrock covered with mold, it is almost positive that the mold is throughout the entire sheetrock, and the whole thing will have to be pulled out. First, let's find out where the leak's coming from. Second of all, get that sheetrock out of there. And third of all, put it back and make sure that it won't have an opportunity to get back. And on top of the mold situation on, say, in a space, like you go into your bathroom, you see mold. Oh, no, I know that that's there, and I can wipe that down. You can have mold in your attic, on the inside sheathing of your attic, and that can cause health problems, especially if you're talking about knee walls. We were in a house 2 months ago where there was massive mold on the sheathing in the attic right behind an access port because the bathroom vent had a crack in it. So all of that warm air was not going outside the house. It was blowing right onto the sheathing, and although the sheathing, the attic was pretty well vented, it was not enough to get rid of all of that extra moisture.
Definitely. And, you know, some of the other things that can cause mold, leaky or poorly ventilated attics and walls that have trapped moisture. We're doing a project. I work for Hayward Design Build, and we're doing a remodel project over in Shelburne. And it's a salt box, and we got up there the other day as we're starting to do some demolition. And they had the typical vaulted ceiling with it was tongue and groove, looked great, but there was no air barrier behind it. And that meant all the warm, moist air from inside was getting out, and then it was hitting the back of the sheathing, and the thing was black and full of mold throughout the attic from the framing to the sheathing, whatever. And thus, that's going to become a much bigger project, but it's the right thing to do to get it out of there, because if we leave it there, it's going to circulate through the airstream inside the house, and it doesn't just leak out. It can actually reinfiltrate, and once those spores get in there and you're constantly breathing those, it could really make you more affected on a long-term basis with headaches, with more allergies, with other sicknesses, and that's why it's important to get those things remediated appropriately.
Sometimes you don't know that you have a mold problem, and that's affecting your immune system, and other symptoms are popping up because your immune system is having trouble dealing with just the onslaught.
There was a lady up in northern Vermont where we had done some work years ago for her, and it was I was doing something that was not even related to this area of the house, but I got into the crawl space, and all of a sudden I felt a drip on top of my head, and I looked up, and the floor was wet, and I said, I wonder if someone spilt something. There was no piping in that area. It was a sunny day outside, so it wasn't rain. And I went outside and started looking around underneath the vinyl siding, and the sheathing was crumbling in my hands. We took back a few sections, and everything was rotten in there.
Vertical mulch.
Yes, but even the framing members were rotten. It became an insurance claim. But the homeowner, she came home, and she said, that is why I always have extreme headaches when I sit in that room, because she wouldn't sit in that room because she would start to get, you know, affected by this. And so it has more of an effect we need. We don't want everyone to be overly conscious about it, but we definitely want you to be aware and take appropriate steps to make sure your indoor air quality is properly addressed.
I'll just say we have in Vermont one of the oldest housing stocks in the country. We have most of 99% of our stock is before 1970, and if you start going earlier, we have, I mean, all of those four square houses from the 20s. These are great houses. They have a lot of beautiful things going on inside them, but they can have really big problems when somebody makes them tighter without looking at the rest of the issues, right? Without looking at, if we make it tighter, what are we doing to how air is flowing, how moisture is collecting? So we want to make sure that we're making our houses more energy efficient and more comfortable, but we want to do that always with an eye to keeping our indoor air quality in good shape.
So if you do have any questions regarding your home whatsoever, please give us a call at 802-244-1777, and we'd be happy to have you join in the conversation. But some of the other things we want to look at right now are going to be the things you start to use once it starts getting colder. That's the combustion equipment, and how safely is it performing? You know, as Chris mentioned before, we've seen several of these where they're backdrafting. That means the exhaust that's toxic is coming back into the living space because of certain pressures on the house, and that could be because the house might be really tight and they're turning on bath fans or new dryers that are have a pretty aggressive airstream, and they're pushing that through, and it's depressurizing the house and bringing those combustion gases back down into the living space.
A poorly drafting chimney. We've also seen something where you have a boiler for your hot water that is not directly attached to its own chimney, but is attached to the flue leaving from the boiler into the chimney, and those can also backdraft very easily.
Yes.
There are three types of combustion gas situations. You have what's called sealed combustion, where there's a tube that goes from the outside and goes to the combustion, bringing the fresh air from the outside, and then the gases go back out of another tube to the outside, right? That's sealed combustion. That's the best situation because you're not depressurizing the house or bringing in anything that the machine doesn't need. Then you have power vented, where in order to make sure the draft is good, that you're not going to have backdrafting, they put a fan on that pushes the flue gases out, but it's still bringing the combustion air that it's using for the combustion process from the room that it's in. And the last one, which is the worst one for this type of thing, is atmospheric venting. And that is where combustion oxygen is coming from the room that's inside it, and the only thing that's drawing those flue gases out is the chimney itself. And if you have a badly drafting chimney, and that cannot be necessarily badly drafting the whole time, it can be during certain conditions.
Especially when it's cold.
When there's a wind blowing down on your house, and you're like, well, it never happens. No, actually, it happens quite often. That's when we can start getting those combustion gases in our houses. The other one that Jim pointed out to me when we were doing our audits back in 2012 at the beginning of our collaboration is if you have a garage and you have a car in that garage, and that garage is attached to your house, and you go out and you turn that car on because you want it nice and warm before you get in it to go to work, we see more often than not that the wall between the garage and the house is not properly air sealed, and that you're actually getting exhaust in your house while you're getting ready to go to work. That's a real dangerous one. We have to watch out for that.
Even tuck under garages, those are really bad. There was one that we looked at over in Jeffersonville where it was a relatively new home, but the home allowed for you to drive. The garage was actually underneath the house in the basement itself. And so when you drove into there, nothing was blocking or separating the airstream at all. And when we got there, she had a CO detector that was going off.
And it was CO, carbon monoxide.
Yes, carbon monoxide detector, and it was registering about 13 parts per million. But let me explain a little bit about that. Most of the off-the-shelf CO detectors that you can buy right now are going to be triggered at 32 parts per million sustained. That means you're going to have CO events that are going to introduce carbon monoxide, poisonous carbon monoxide, into the airstream for a prolonged period of time at that amount. However, as Chris mentioned, when the CO starts to affect the human body, it affects it at only 9 parts per million. And that's when it starts to rob the seats, if you will, for the oxygen molecules and takes its place. And then, once again, you have to either grow new blood cells or get them transfused to get over this. And so it does have a real effect. There are better CO detectors on the market, which they will actually trigger at the lower rate, but they're usually a couple hundred dollars. But when you're talking about the health and safety of your family, it's well worth the investment.
Yeah, if you have a monitor that's going off regularly, then maybe a slight investment in something where you can get better data would be good. We have Sean in Montpelier. Sean, how can we help you today?
Great. Thank you. Yeah, so I actually have two questions. One I'm pretty sure is in scope, and if the other one's out of scope, you could just tell me so. So the first one is wondering about an attic.
The attic. I mean, old house that doesn't have any insulation in the attic. And having looked at it, trying to finish it out, if you're going to do cathedral ceilings, I understand kind of the spray foam is one way to go. Is that pretty much the only way to go as far as a cathedral ceiling approach?
No, there's a lot of ways to go, but the one thing I'll first recommend is we do have a video on our website that Chris will introduce that address for us again, but you can go view that. It's a really great animation on how to change the actual insulation profile of that roof assembly. Chris, where would you find that?
That's if you go to YouTube and look up House Calls Vermont, or go to the send us an email to that housecallsvt@gmail.com, and I can send you the link, but you should be able to find it just looking up the YouTube channel.
But when going with the cathedral ceiling, you know, there's several different methods that you can go with. One, if you've never insulated that space before, keep in mind you're going to then insulated, but you have to meet the residential building energy standard, or RBE's requirements of bringing that up to an R49
minimum.
Yeah. So in doing that, maybe your framing members aren't tall enough or allow for that kind of space, because, you know, if you're looking at cellulose insulation, that's about 3.7 R per inch. So to get R49, you've got to really pile that in there. Even dense packing won't get it there. So a lot of times foam is the answer. And if this is an older home, you might not have consistent framing dimensions. So you might have 16 inches on center, and then 2 foot, and then 30 inches, and then whatever in between. And so putting a traditional product in there. It makes it tough. So foaming can work. You really want to make sure that you're sourcing a company that has been in business for a long time, that understands the intricacies of spray foam, because you can do it wrong, but you can do it really well at the same time. I will also say that there are some people, not everybody, but we're talking about indoor air quality, who are sensitive to some of the chemicals in the foam. So you just want to make sure that that's not going to be an issue, because once you put that in, it's really tough to get that back out. But no matter what, I want to go ahead and see, no matter what assembly you do, that it's going to be a ventilated assembly. But go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so the question that popped into my mind is spray foam is a solution, but we got to know what's going on outside of the decking, right? So if you're in your attic and you're looking up and you're seeing those matchsticks, which I imagine from an older house you'd have, which are like these 1x6 planks that form the roof, what's on the other side of that?
On the other side, actually, I just gotten the roof just redone this summer, so I got ice and water over the whole
Okay.
Ice and water over the whole roof, and then asphalt shingles on top of the ice and water.
So this is a classic situation. We often hear people telling us that they just had their roof done when they also want to do some insulation, and the right time in the future, just so you know.
To anybody else listening.
To anyone else listening, and Sean, if you have friends who are looking at this, make sure you have someone like us come out and take a look before you do your roof if you're thinking about changing the thermal boundary. Just because that's the perfect time to add rigid insulation to the outside of the assembly if that's an option. That's why I would say in your situation specifically, old wood, completely vapor closed on the outside, I would not want to go with foam just because there's nowhere for moisture to go if it gets trapped in there. There are some very good assemblies that we can look at using bat insulation with some
batten
insulation, yep. Or using a dense pack. But that would probably, depending on the depth of the rafters and the R values that you have to hit minimally, that could mean building into the attic space to get that.
And Chris is right. You know, definitely once you go with the foam or once you go with the roof, you are limited to what different profiles you can achieve in there. And even though you may spray foam it and people say, oh, you don't need that to vent after that, you do because you want to be able to carry away moisture that may accumulate in that space. Because if you don't, the foam is going to seal that away and you're going to have deterioration and it can't dry upwards anymore because it has ice and water. That's
vapor
closed. It can't dry inside. So it could compromise the structure. It doesn't mean it will,
no.
But it certainly could if conditions are right on site.
And we call that a vapor sandwich. So,
yes.
So can you hold on for just a minute? We're up against a break, but we'll...
But we'd like to take your second question for sure.
Sure. So, that sounds great. Thank you.
But first and foremost, I just want to say that, you know, these are the types of things when someone calls in and there's a lot of details here. And putting eyes on it is really important to be able to see what's going on. And so having a trained professional that knows their stuff, that understands building science and is not just selling you a widget, that gets out there and looks at the house as a system. Because, you know, as Chris mentioned, well, how is the attic going to connect to the walls? And then how is it going to connect to the basement? And I'm thinking, what about solar shading right now? Are there trees involved that are going to make it harder for things to dry out? So all these things have to be taken in consideration. So I just want people to be aware of, yes, we're able to give information, but be able to put eyes on it first, that's really important. But Sean, you also had another question, if you don't mind going ahead.
I wasn't sure it was directly related to efficiency. I'm converting a kind of space over it into an apartment. And in coming in the garage space, to take out the driveway to bring in the water and sewer, and it had been a concrete driveway. I'm putting a permeable driveway over it. But the spot I was wondering about was where the concrete surface of the garage comes up to the edge of the frost wall. There's a lip there that had been kind of part of the driveway going down, and so I wasn't sure with that if that should be, you know, sealed with foam and then more concrete, or if it's okay to bring kind of the crushed stone right up to there, or I'm not sure if I'm describing it well.
I think I understand what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me, so the garage is not a heated space, right?
Correct. The garage isn't a heated space, so I'm making a heated space, an envelope in there, which will have a spiral staircase going up on just kind of the edge of the garage.
Right.
And so the envelope will be, I did have foam sprayed onto the
ceiling,
the joist above.
Yeah,
the ceiling there. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a lot to say about ceilings above unheated garages, but in your particular situation, you're talking about how do I make sure that I'm connecting the unheated garage to this new driveway. Do I have that right?
Yeah, right, because it's right over the frost wall and just, you know, not wanting any, I guess, both the airflow but also water or anything.
Yeah, I'd make sure, do well drained, make
yes,
sure that you've
definitely.
Got a good drainage there and the material under it is good, but you don't, in my understanding, by code and just from the building science, you have an unheated space next to an unheated space, I wouldn't insulate it because there's no heat to hold anywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sean.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. We have Karen in Charlotte. Karen, how can we help you today?
Hi. My question is about, we have a walkout lower level, and it's got 8-foot ceilings. So on one side, you've got windows and doors, but on the back side, it's
poured concrete.
Underground.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think we're having some mold issues. So I think we probably, what do you think about insulation, or what, how do you, you know, we probably have to have it remediated and take out the sheetrock and clean it out, but what would you recommend for insulating or to prevent it from happening again?
Yeah, that's a great, great, great question. So the first thing I want to know is what's the wall made out of? Is it a poured concrete wall? Is it a cinder block wall? Is it?
It was poured as part of the foundation. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. That's good. And it seems to me the way you're describing it that the that it's been finished and that somebody built a stud wall out from it. Am I getting that right?
Correct.
And there's like fiberglass or something between the studs.
Yeah, fiberglass insulation. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that type of wall, you have to be very careful when you're putting any kind of wood or bat insulation against a concrete wall, because concrete walls, although people think there's no bulk water coming through, it actually is. Mm-hmm. Moisture moves through a concrete wall, even with damp proofing and good drainage on the outside. So what we always recommend is, we would probably, and I'm just saying this, not seeing it or knowing where that is to pull all of that out.
Yes.
Take the framing out, the fiberglass out, the sheetrock out. Treat the mold. And then go back with 3 inches or 2.5 inches. We use a product called Thermax, which is a polyiso product. It'll give you an R15, which is the Arby's minimum. And from there, you can put in some studs if you want to build out. But
with that, the Thermax is one that is actually a fire-rated material, so it can be left exposed. And so if you're not going to finish off the space readily, then you can leave. Go ahead.
No, it's nice. Yeah, it's nice space.
So there was a product that we've been using recently. It's a silverboard product, and it has foil on both sides, and it's an EPS material. And that EPS goes right against the wall. It is going to mitigate that vapor intrusion there. And then you can frame once you attach that to the wall, you can frame in front of that, and then add more insulation into those bays. Which I would recommend not going with fiberglass. I'd rather see like a rock wool product because that's much more resilient. Mice don't like it as well, and it's a better R value too at the same time.
So this all happens from the inside.
Yes. Much so less expensive.
Treat it, and then so you said there's the foil, the two-sided foil, or the Thermax.
Yeah, silverboard.
Yeah, and we'll put the YouTube channel. I'll definitely put all the links in for all these products. So if you wait a week until I get this up or send me an email, I'll make sure I get you that product information. But make sure this is definitely something that we would want a professional to put eyes on.
Yeah, because there could be a moisture situation, behind the scenes that what's causing that elevated moisture inside the basement that's leading to the mold that, needs to be stopped. That cycle needs to be broken. So just redoing the space, but keeping those underlying issues present, you're not really putting your money in the right place. And so that we would want to find out, is it a moisture intrusion from water from the outside, or is it something else?
Yep.
So who is a good person to evaluate? Is that two different types of people, or who would be a good person to have come look at it?
Well, you certainly could have a trained building science professional come take a look at it. And like if we were to come out, I'm not soliciting anything, but if we were to come out, we work with partners like Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems. He's been on the show, and he would come out in conjunction with that, so we could do a comprehensive review and project possibly and get this done appropriately. You could call Matt and have him take a look, but a lot of times he might employ somebody like us too, because some of the work that you're going to do is going to allow for rebates to be extended for some of this work through Efficiency Vermont, and utilizing one of their EEN contractors that is on their website would be a great opportunity.
And are you, when you say we, you mean Hayward?
No.
The EEN, the Efficiency Vermont Energy Excellence Network.
Because they'll tell you who's geographically closer to you and everything else, and you can check out their certifications and then make your selections from there.
Okay.
Got it. Thanks, guys.
You're very welcome.
So there's a YouTube. It's just, what's the...
So if you go to YouTube and you look up House Calls Vermont, you should be able to see a bunch of the videos we've made, including the right way to do a basement. I put that up a number. It's under instructional videos. And if you send me an email, if you can't find it, I'll send you the link.
Okay.
Great. Thank you so much. Great show.
You're welcome, Karen. Thank you. And now we have Dan in Cabot. Dan, go ahead with your question.
Old roof, and I'm just looking for the best practice, not necessarily manufacturer's warranty or whatever, but when we spray foam a roof, a roof system, and then we could just slap down a new roof right to it, whether it's standing seam or asphalt or whatever. Now, my question is, with the 10-inch sit panels commonly found on timber frame, one place might say you need to strap it and lay another layer of plywood, whereas others don't. And I'm asking, what's the right way, regardless of whose opinion, what's the right way? And why do we need to, why can we leave spray foam a hot, whereas a sit panel sometimes needs to be cold? Not that all sit panels say that, but do you know, like, the right way so I can give customers the right answer?
Well, one thing for sure is, you know, after seeing some of the studies done by the Green Building Advisor and the Building Science Corp, they took an assembly that they made it basically a hot roof. They foamed everything, so it was really airtight. But they found they always like to tear things apart after they build them.
5 years.
Right. 5 years. And they went back and they found that some of those framing members at the upper level, at the peaks
the
of the roof.
The top 3 feet to near the ridge.
Were rotting away
yep.
because of vapor drive. And so it's not just bulk air.
Can you say what vapor drive is? Not to cut you off. But
absolutely. So vapor drive is – so anything – this is one of my spiels, right? Nature abhors an imbalance. So when you have a higher concentration of vapor in one place and a lower concentration in another, like you have in the heating season when we have more moisture inside our house than we have outside our house, the moisture, the water vapor, actually the gaseous water, pushes through all of our assemblers, pushes through our sheetrock painted with paint. It pushes through our fiberglass. It pushes through everything and will deposit on the first layer that is below the dew point. And sometimes, it depends on the type of spray foam. Opal's open cell spray foam is not a first condensing layer. It's not where that would deposit. It would actually migrate through and deposit possibly on the sheathing at the very top. So
We all push for closed cell nowadays.
Right. And closed cell, depending on the type of closed cell and how it's installed, it can be good enough to create a warm roof without venting. But we've had so many places where we go in and we're seeing the shrinkage and pulling away from members in the attic or in the roof, in the rafters, that we are much happier going with a vapor open assembly.
And go ahead.
Isn't that installation practices, though? Like, I mean, really, it's supposed to be done perfect temperature, every 2 inches, let
yes.
it cure, lay another 2 inches, but everybody's all about the money, so they just want to fill the bay if somebody's not watching over their shoulders. No offense to the spray foamers, because there's good guys out there. But
one good thing that's being pushed is that spray foam is going to be coming out with a new type of blowing agent, an HFO, a hydrofluoroolefin, instead of a hydrofluorocarbon. It's a new thing in the state, and don't want to overcomplicate things. But one thing that's important about that is it actually allows for you to blow more than you normally could. So instead of a 1 or 2 inch lift, you can actually do more at that point in time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But here's a couple things as a takeaway that I'll say is, once again, you'll never go wrong by making sure it's ventilated.
Yep.
Even if you spray foam or you put cellulose or whatever, you'll never go wrong. You will definitely have an opportunity of going wrong if you don't. But with that, you always have to yield towards also the manufacturer's warranty and what they're going to stand behind. Because I have seen that if there's anything that can be, that they can latch onto and say, oh, it voids the warranty, that's not going to help. But you don't want to have a callback. You want to be able to do this work for your customers, give them the satisfaction that they spent their money correctly, and that you know that as a reputable person that you've done this correctly. So I would say in any case that you can, I would ventilate it just to make sure.
Just to be clear, you're saying put proper vent on the underside of the exterior decking and then foam that. At least we'd have that.
That's not rigid. Yeah, actually, the proper vents aren't rigid enough. What we do is we use cleats, like wood cleats, like a 1-inch by 1.5-inch cleat, put that along the sides of the rafters, and then put Luon that is cut to fit, and that's a vapor permeable product as well, and that will go underneath and be rigid enough to stop the foam from compressing it and blocking the vent channel.
Yeah.
Understood. There's added labor, obviously,
yes.
when you do that. Okay, real quick, what about the sit panels, hot or cold? Should it be strapped or not, in your opinion?
We like to vent everything just because it increases the longevity of whatever
yes.
you're putting on top of it, but not you don't have to, right?
Yeah.
That's a very gray area. Dan, we're right up against the end of the show. Can you if you would send me an email, I'd like to engage with you further and really talk this out and make sure that we understand what you're asking and we can give you our measured opinion.
Yeah, great. Absolutely. Great show. Thanks, guys.
Hey,
thanks
for calling in. And Chris, once again, here we are up against an hour. Yeah, and it's been great, and we do really appreciate everybody calling in, your participation. One thing we weren't able to get to is that we've been getting quite a few emails from some of our listeners, which has been wonderful. This is what we're here for, and with some really great questions, and we were going to read some of those on the air. Doesn't mean we're going to read everybody's, you know, so don't be alarmed. But, you know, and we won't mention names, but we want to just be able to get some of these questions out there because it does relate to a lot of your projects as well. And so in the future, we plan to do so. But for now, really, thank you for being a part of the show. Christy, do you have any closing comments?
Yeah, we only got about halfway through our notes. This happened last week, too. So what we're doing is we're going to have an Indoor Air Quality 1, which is today's show. Next week, we'll do that again. And the week after that, we'll be having a special on windows. Call about any of your questions.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be about indoor air quality or windows. We want to hear. Give us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com. Go to our YouTube channel. Like and subscribe if you like what we're doing. We have edits of the show with including much more information. I put a lot of graphics on that it's just, you know, are giving you graphical descriptions
of
the
great things
we're talking about, and also some instructional videos which show how to build certain assemblies. If you have a question that's not being answered there, once again, send us an email or call in, and we'd be happy to make that happen.
So thanks for joining us once again, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Yeah, you guys have a great weekend. Until next week.
House Calls Vermont on WDEV has been brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive in Waterbury, Shamrock Painting, Painting and Custom Wood Finishing, ShamrockPaintingCompany.com, RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield, Sticks and Stuff in Swanton Lumber, locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex, Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Home Builders and Remodelers Association Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all. Online at polyconstruction.com.